I became editor of Barbie magazine, and that was my first role in mags. And when I started at Hello, world exclusives were relatively easy to get. It's always an amazing privilege to attend somebody's wedding.
Yes.
And I was lucky enough to attend lots. The one that always sticks out for me is Robbie Williams' wedding.
Yes.
In LA. Nobody knew anything about it, the fact that he was getting married. And now exclusives seem to be broken so readily.
One of the hardest life lessons for me has been grace and grace under pressure. Like, we don't always feel like it.
Towards, you know, the end of my time at Hello, if you looked at my Instagram and it looking like somebody is absolutely nailing life. And what happened was I woke up in a lovely London hotel after hosting a big event. And I just thought, yeah, I cannot do this anymore. I didn't want to feel negatively about a role that I'd loved for many years, but I had evolved. The media world had evolved. My hormones were rather than evolving, depleting. And it all was like a perfect storm.
And what was next?
One of my core values was freedom. Mm. And the one thing that I didn't feel in my previous role was free. Mm. And the freedom that I have as an entrepreneur really is everything to me.
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasco. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife, so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasco, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. She is an award-winning journalist and editor, working on a number of glossy magazines, most notably as the editor of Hello Magazine for an incredible 14 years. She's a qualified life coach, author, business owner, charity ambassador, and also, not forgetting, a mum of two. Wow, what a fascinating and varied career. Welcome to Grit and Grace podcast. Rosie Nixon. Hello, Rosie.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. Let's go back to the very beginning. You were born and bred in London. Tell me about little Rosie and what she was like.
I was born to teachers. My father was a head teacher of a school in London. My mum, a music and English teacher. And I think if you'd asked them about the little me, they'd probably have mentioned that I was quite a prolific writer.
Yeah.
A letter writer.
Yes.
Diary writer.
Letter writer.
Yeah.
Who did you write letters to?
Well, all of my friends. I mean, because we were living, obviously, in a time before social media. Yeah. And the home phone was downstairs in the hallway. So you would either get hold of that, or if my brother or sister wasn't on it, or somebody else.
There was a huge
You'd
fight.
Have to write letters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I've got boxes of them, actually, at home. Which is an amazing memory box to go through, because all of that teen angst is in those letters. And some of them have got, I remember there were pictures of what I'm going to wear to a disco at the weekend, you know,
amazing.
Drawn in there.
Yeah.
And the diary as well, I think probably influenced by the Diary of Adrian Mull.
Yes, exactly.
Diary writing was a big thing, and I still have those. So I guess I was always a wordsmith and loved the, you know, using language to be able to describe my feelings, which is really powerful and something we should still encourage in our kids.
Were magazines part of young Rosie's life?
Magazines very much, smash hits. I used to get delivered, and I'd record the top 40 Radio One on my cassette player, you know, stopping it so I didn't get Bruno Brooks talking over the tracks.
Yeah.
And then cut out the song words from smash hits, start refashioning them into my own magazines.
Yes.
I guess I was already editing from a young age.
Yes.
Posters on the bedroom wall of the bands.
And who were your favourites? Who are your favourite bands?
Well, Wham, obviously, and Bross. Yes. I was a big Brossette for many years. Had the bottle tops on my shoes
and
the ripped jeans.
Yeah.
So I guess I was always interested in popular culture and who were the big names of the day and the stories of the day. Sky magazine I used to love as well. Do you remember Sky?
Sky magazine,
that felt really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and women's mags?
And Women's Mags then later on. Just 17. Yeah, and the power of teen mags to, you know, answer your questions on boys and periods and, you know, what's happening to your body at every stage. They have a really important role to play. I mean, a lot of that advice is now out there on social media, kind of unsolicited, but you could always rely on a magazine.
Yeah, and it being
for being expert-led. Yes, they had a really important place in my world from a young age.
Talk to me about bands and who you were into.
Well, I was quite a brossette from a young age. Yeah. Had the bottle tops on my shoes.
And the ridges. And
the ridges.
And did you ever get to meet them as a grown-up?
I did, funnily enough. I did interview Matt Goss a long time later for a magazine.
And what was he like?
He was charming. He actually asked for my phone number, invited me out for a drink.
Okay.
Which the 13-year-old me would have been dying and screaming inside. No, it never actually happened. I remember he was going into a reality TV show and we texted a few times and I was a bit unsure anyway.
How nice could have been.
I know, exactly. But yeah, I think, the teen me would not have believed that.
No. And so fast forward to your magazine editor tricks career. How did that start and how has it been, and frame that for me, because part of what the podcast is about is journeys and how we get there and the different twists and turns of life. So bring us a bit more up to date.
Well, it's been an amazing journey and I've absolutely loved it, and I've worked hard to get to where I did in magazines. My first role after graduating, I went to Sussex University. I graduated, worked in children's book publishing for a few years, from the unpaid work experience to editorial assistant to working my way up to be an editor of children's books. But I guess I didn't feel that it exactly was where my heart kind of wanted me to be in my career. And then I saw a job advertised in the Media Guardian, which used to come out on a Monday, and that's where all the media jobs would appear, as editor of Barbie magazine. It was something
did,
about
and that
it.
Taught to you.
It did. Because it kind of spoke to me.
Did you have a Barbie?
Well, no, but I worked. I didn't actually play with Barbies.
Yeah.
I was I didn't really as I was when I was a girl.
Yeah.
But I had worked in children's book publishing and I sort of knew a lot about hitting the right notes with parents as well as children, the educational aspect of children's publishing. And I guess something appealed to me about the opportunity here. And obviously it was quite girly and I felt like a bit fashion-y, maybe creative.
Yes. Yes.
So I applied for this job with no experience in magazines, but obviously my book publishing experience, went up to London and got offered that job. So I became editor of Barbie magazine and that was my first role in mags.
Okay.
And it was just me and a designer putting together a fortnightly magazine.
Yes.
So it's quite a high frequency.
Yes.
Writing every word in the magazine. So
did
I'd
you?
Write the stories about Barbie and Ken.
What was the best story about Barbie and Ken?
Well, it was always quite a sort of challenge to make the stories work for the mother that might be reading it, perhaps entertain them as much as the child that would be listening.
Yes.
But of course, Barbie is owned by Mattel, so there was a licensee to approve all of the content that I was creating. So I had to be very mindful of that. And they would literally come back, you know, having read through every word with great precision that I'd written, and say, you know, Barbie's tone isn't quite right here. Or
okay, it's not very Barbie.
Barbie would say, excuse me, not pardon me. Or, you know, Barbie would eat this at a picnic. It was unbelievable.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of life lessons in that.
Yeah, it's worked out the psyche of the doll. But so that was a real baptism of fire in a way, because of, you know, from creating a flat plan to writing the copy, editing it, making it fit, working with the designer, even doing cover shoots with the doll. You know, we'd have her in a tank underwater.
Yeah.
I learned everything about the editorial process.
Yeah, through Barbie.
Through
that first job, as we
through Barbie. So it's been great to see the sort of resurgence of Barbie.
Did you feel emotionally connected to Barbie
did a
being
here? I've always felt quite emotionally connected to her now.
Because
she's had a transformation, hasn't she?
She has.
And at the time, there wasn't a lot of diversity in the doll. And I remember feeling a real responsibility that you have as an editor to portray a responsible image to these young, very impressionable girls.
Yeah, absolutely. So take me to Hello, where you were for a long time, and that meant you were absolutely at the apex of a huge culture shift around storytelling and celebrity. And how was that?
Yeah, so I've gradually sort of grown up with my magazines, sort of through teen magazines to women's glossies. I worked at Glamour magazine when it became handbag size, Red magazine, Grazia was there for 2 years around the launch time, which is a really exciting moment for weekly magazines. And then had a call from Hello, where I went across initially as assistant editor, then became joint editor, editor, and then editor-in-chief, was there for almost 16 years.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, you know, I lived and breathed that magazine, really cared about it as my third child.
Yeah.
But obviously in that time, the publishing world has changed hugely.
Yeah.
It's become a multi-platform operation, available to your audience 24/7. We've seen the advent of social media. At the time when I started at Hello, you know, world exclusives were relatively easy to get because big stars needed to work with a media outlet. When they had a story to tell, there was a big personal moment, like a wedding. Hello's obviously very well known for weddings and baby shoots and glimpses inside the homes of the rich and the famous and the fabulous.
Give me the best. What was the best? What was the worst? Who was the best?
Talk about the worst, obviously. But I think the best, well, it's always an amazing privilege to attend somebody's wedding.
Yes.
And I was lucky enough to attend lots all around the world.
Yes.
The one that always sticks out for me is Robbie Williams' wedding in LA.
Yes.
I flew in just ahead of the wedding. Nobody knew anything about it, the fact that he was getting married. And now exclusives seem to be broken so readily, you know, and easily.
Yeah.
We had to get a no-fly zone over his home. It was taking place in his house in LA.
Yeah.
And I did an interview with Robbie and Ida in their bedroom the night before the wedding.
Yes.
That was just incredible access.
And they
were just on cloud nine. And that was really special. But I actually flew home. I wasn't there for the wedding. I had to go get the plane home so that we could turn around the pictures and the whole issue within 24 hours and be on sale a day later.
Okay. So,
it was fast paced.
Fast paced.
Yeah.
So change, you know, part of what this podcast is about is grit and grace. And the reason for the title is when I'm asked what are the things that really count, to me, it's that grit trumps genius every day of the week. And one of the hardest life lessons for me has been grace and grace under pressure. Like, we don't always feel like it. We don't always feel like the smile. Sometimes we feel like burning a bridge. Sometimes it's just too much. Mm. Talk about it getting too much and talk about change, because that's one of the things that I find so interesting about the last few years for you, that 16 years anywhere is a really long time, particularly when you're in such a position that so many people in your industry would give their right arm for. So talk about change and how you got there and what drove that.
Well, I think grit and grace is a really great way of describing it, actually, because I think I was treading that sort of delicate tightrope a lot of the time, and certainly in recent years, towards, you know, the end of my time at Hello, if you looked at my Instagram squares, you would have seen grace everywhere, you know, and it looking like somebody is absolutely nailing life and still managing to have a blowout and go to glamorous events and look after their kids and hold down a busy job.
Yeah, work hard, play hard.
But actually underneath, you know, a bit like that swan analogy, perfect above the water, but underneath, you know, legs going like crazy, trying to keep all the balls in the air.
Yeah.
And I think for me, what happened was, it was actually, well, I remember the exact date, it was the 3rd of October 2022, when I woke up in a lovely London hotel after hosting a big event for Hello the day before that went brilliantly well, a big awards ceremony, and my phone was exploding. I was meant to be on conference with the team. I had another packed diary day that coming up. I had missed FaceTime calls from my kids on the phone from the night before, and I just had my moment when I wanted to throw my phone out the window, and I just thought, I cannot do this anymore. And I broke down and sobbing on the bed, managed to call my husband, who obviously was very alarmed, but amazing, and he and had kind of seen this coming, really, building up for at least a year previous. I was running on adrenaline day to day. And I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I don't want this life anymore.
Was it burnout? Do you think about it like
Yeah,
that?
I think I was on the road to burnout. I don't think it was full burnout. But I think it was the first time that I really realised that stress lives in your nervous system. And if you ignore the warning signs for long enough, the body knows the truth, doesn't it? And then eventually it's going to affect you physically. And that was a real wake-up call to me. And I realised I'd never given myself a moment just to take in what I was doing. Like, really, I should have cleared my diary that next day, knowing that it'd been a really busy time. And I now, well, we can get on to talking about the measures that I've put into my life to ensure I don't get back to that place again. But I think for many women, there's a sort of... There was also kind of a guilt that actually on the surface of it, this is all fine. I'm just running a glossy magazine. I shouldn't be complaining. I should just get on with it. But actually that sort of negates the reality that many of us feel that we're not coping. And it's all right to feel like that. So I that kind of resulted then in having a few weeks off work. So again, it wasn't full burnout, which can affect people for months and be a long road to recovery. But I needed to give my body a chance to recover and also to do some deeper thinking around who am I now in my late 40s? What do I want my next chapter to be about? My values have changed since I began the world of work, my strengths have evolved, the things that are really important to me in life are changing, and perhaps I need to make a few tweaks because this isn't working as well for me as it once did.
And talk to me about perimenopause and whether those two things were overlapping, and did you have a language or a sense of what that might be? So you will have been 47.
I was 47 when this happened, I think, well, for many midlife women, and for me included, it is that melting pot of a lot of things all happening around the same time. And hormones, I'm sure, played a part in that as well. I had been starting to experience some of the symptoms of perimenopause, some brain fog, increased anxiety that I'd never experienced before.
Did you think, did you have enough of a context to say... this is what's happening.
Not at the time. No. So a lot of this is what I now know in retrospect.
Absolutely.
But ironically, at the time, I was, you know, busy sort of making lots of noise about menopause awareness at Hello. So that's how I began to sort of put the pieces together and think, hang on, I'm not just talking about other women here.
This is actually me.
And it was actually in an interview with Gabby Logan that I did around a menopause campaign. She was describing some of her symptoms and how they hit her around the age of 47. And I'm sat there thinking, oh my God, the penny's just dropping, dropping.
Absolutely.
Afterwards said, you know, I had a little chat with her. She was so lovely to me. And she said, I think you should book an appointment with the doctor. It sounds like you could be in perimenopause. And again, it was a penny-dropping moment that I think lots of women have.
Absolutely.
And it's so easy to lump everything on our work and blame work. And that's why I'm feeling like this. So I didn't want to feel negatively about a role that I'd loved for many years, but I had evolved. The media world had evolved. My hormones were, rather than evolving, depleting. And it all was like a perfect storm.
And so what happened next? One of the things that I've heard you talk very elegantly about is measures. And then I want to come on and talk about what you're doing now and how you pivot and how you change and how you reinvent your retreats. But maybe let's just talk practically first, because obviously part of the reason that we're here today is to talk about menopause. That's sort of my mission, and we're very proud to have you as an investor in the Better Menopause. So talk a bit about what you do and how you've changed how you feel in order that next year when you emerge into the next decade, you're better set than you were at 47.
Well, going into menopause sort of initially, so I did make that appointment at the doctor, and a game-changing piece of advice was to call up your GP, surgery, ask to speak to the resident menopause expert so that you're put in front of the right person. Because I think for many women, it takes a long time to even get to the person that's going to give you valuable advice.
Yeah.
And then I did initially try HRT, hoping that that would be a quick fix, which I now know it isn't, not necessarily, not for all women.
Yeah.
And for me, it kind of was all right for a bit, but I wasn't sure that it was really helping the symptoms, but probably because I was also in tandem looking at my working life too. I was having some coaching, which really helped me with that. Yeah. Tried HRT. I think perhaps I was putting too much estrogen into my body because I actually, my skin broke out in lots of hormonal sort of spots, which I'd never had anything like that before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I felt that it perhaps wasn't completely agreeing with me, but there were still symptoms to be tackled. And then was thrilled when I learned about the Better Menopause company and had a conversation with Joe. And decided to look at gut health and started taking that supplement, which really helped improve things. Because I think, like a lot of women, I felt a lot of stress in my gut and did have issues there. That was a game changer for me. It took a number of weeks to sort of kick in to start to work. But now I religiously take the Better Gut every evening and then later the Better Night. As a
was sleep an issue
an issue, and you and I have talked before about an addiction to melatonin. And I'm happy to say I've stopped.
And that's a hard habit to break.
That
is
a hard habit to break.
A decade. On 10, well, we've talked about
we had 10 milligrams. Yeah, and getting people to send it over. Yeah. If I couldn't get to the States.
Absolutely. Drug meals flying.
Totally. But now I know that I can take two capsules of the Best Menopause if I feel, and psychologically as well, knowing that I've got that boost, I think helps too.
Yeah.
Or I generally take one now, and that's enough. To sleep well at night, because obviously sleep deprivation impacts your life in so many ways.
Yeah.
Your decision making becomes poor when you're tired. You know, I was unable to be there properly for my children when you're exhausted and you're on a short fuse. So I now, and exercise as well was the other thing. I exercise daily now. Outside when I can.
Outside and weights.
Yeah, weights.
Rather than, because I was always cardio queen.
Yes.
Right? Now I live
heavy. Although I still do like some cardio. I ran a half marathon a couple of months ago.
Congratulations.
But getting outside into nature is just everything to me. And I know that if I'm feeling slightly in a fog or anxiety's rising, I just need to get myself outside, and a half hour walk can be enough.
Change it up.
Yeah.
Talk to me about reinvention,
because
you've invented reinvention, and what that means to you and this next chapter. So you're 47, you're in a hotel, you decide you're going to change your life, there's a recognition that you're in perimenopause, you try some stuff, you've got a protocol that's working better, and now what in terms of the plan for Rosie going forward?
Well, in the weeks that I had off work, kind of rebuilding my strength and getting well again, I spent a lot of time walking all around the Surrey Hills where I live, and journaling actually in the notes section on my phone.
Yeah.
So kind of self-coaching, and I'd had some experience of coaching in the past. I've always loved everything about the coaching mindset. It's very positive, takes people as they are today and helps you work towards your goals. And so I started kind of journaling the things that I really loved about my working life, and then the things that weren't really fulfilling me anymore. I mean, literally in columns.
Yeah.
On it, you know, it's quite a simple exercise and a great
tool.
And
does that help to get it out of your head and onto
Out of your head onto the
you're
page?
You're a writer. Make it real. As well.
I'm a writer. Yeah,
yeah.
So obviously,
that's your process.
It is my process. And realising that actually there were elements of my role that I really loved, and that was speaking to a midlife audience, which is the heartland, a female midlife audience. Mm. The heartland of the Hello audience had been that as well.
Yeah.
I really loved inspiring people, using a platform for good, presenting things. You know, I was comfortable in that sort of space.
Yeah.
Using sort of vocabulary in the coaching mindset as well was really appealing to me. But the things that I could lose was royal and showbiz news, and yeah. actually to admit
Were
that
you ready?
To myself.
But that's a big, no, you know, to the huge. Point on Grit and Grace yes. and gracefully giving up something yeah. that had been in your DNA, not yeah. only in your DNA, but you kind of invented yeah. it, right? Hello, did yes. in that process. How did that feel?
Well, it was scary.
Could you say
the first
it out
time
loud?
Not initially, no. but then when I got more comfortable with that idea, I almost wanted to shout
yes.
it.
I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I cannot write a cover line yeah. about this.
But that's hard because that's your currency.
Well, yeah.
Isn't
but
it?
Realizing actually that's I'm all right. The world hasn't collapsed. Yeah. I go home, my family's still here. Yeah. I can pick up my kids from my friends are still my friends. Yeah. Like actually the world hasn't yeah. collapsed. I have evolved and actually I need to be comfortable with yeah. that. And so it was getting used to normalizing the idea of reinvention yeah. to be happy with being in a state of being in process as well. There's a great quote from Oprah Winfrey actually about being in process. Yeah. And so many of us fixate on what I am or who I have yeah. to be or my goal. But actually, I'm traveling somewhere and I'm going to enjoy that journey and I'm going to focus on where I need to be as much as the end result.
What was next for you? Age 47, realising that you wanted to change and leaving behind a world where you'd smashed it and where you were at the top of your game. How did that feel?
Well, when your identity is very tied into a certain role, it took some time for myself, firstly, to get used to the fact that I perhaps, you know, deep down wasn't relating to that work identity anymore, to even admit to myself that I needed to make a change. And then secondly, it was how to go about it and how to prevent any sort of self-limiting beliefs from stopping me to move and segue into a new career. So for me, training to be a coach was absolutely integral to that.
Talk to me about that and how you got there. Had you had a coach yourself?
Yeah, I'd had a coach myself, really enjoyed everything about it. As I said earlier, you know, everything to do with the coaching mindset, the positivity, the fact that it's not backwards looking, it's very forwards looking and goal orientated, really just appealed to the way my brain works. I'm a real doer. I like to feel like I'm getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. And doing the training, learning later in life was a completely different experience to learning as a younger person, and I absolutely loved the course that I did. It was with a company called Optimus Academy. You learn online. It was a group of about 10 or 12 of us who met weekly to gain this diploma in coaching. And I loved it as much for the self-awareness that it brought about in me, taking myself through that coaching journey, really digging into my values, my strengths, my own goals for the next chapter of life, but then learning this great skill set that I could then work with other midlife women to help them navigate transitionary periods, which is really my passion now.
So you emerged from this and you've become a founder, you've become an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I know, because so much of my life is spent talking to female entrepreneurs, that some of the best businesses are founded by women in midlife, but B, it's a huge shift. Mm. Right? It can be a scary shift. Mm. Also, you move from being on the payroll to not on the payroll. Yeah. You move from having what must have been all of the trappings of being an editor to not having them.
Yeah.
I found in stages of my life, you go from having a sense of place and an identity that's really very tied to the job title to starting again, to reinventing, to having to really dig into your grit to do that. Talk about your founder journey in the business.
Yeah, well, I'm still, thank you for calling me a founder
you
and
are
entrepreneur, because I'm still getting used to that term. Exactly.
You're in a terrible
I am.
Yeah,
I am.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Repeat after me. I'm Rosie Nixon and I'm an entrepreneur.
I'm Rosie Nixon and I'm an entrepreneur.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, again, it comes back to self-awareness. And really, one of my core values was freedom. Mm. And the one thing that I didn't feel in my previous role working for an organization was free. Mm. And the freedom that I have as an entrepreneur really is everything to me, that I can govern what my week looks like. It's not dictated to me by meetings going in my diary. That
Are you disciplined with governing it? Because I'm not great at that. I find that the diary can get very, very, very full and that's kind of my my happy place.
Yeah.
So how are you strict with yourself about genuinely being free rather than just tied to the new thing?
Yeah, well, I like to be busy, you know, and there's a real difference between sort of being busy and being stressed, because I think stress creeps in when you're busy doing things that don't bring you joy. You know, now I'm busy with things that do bring me joy, so I don't feel stressed. But I like having a packed diary.
Yeah.
I need it. I thrive when I'm around people. And I'm a storyteller at heart. Yeah. I love being with people and hearing their stories. So coaching plays very well into that. And I can be a bit pulled in lots of different directions. So I do have to work at focusing. I do time blocking, which has been amazing for me.
Talk to me about that.
Where you decide, so if you've got a number of tasks to do in the day, often that can make you feel overwhelmed. And so I'll think, right, I've got, in the next 20 minutes, I'm going to only do invoicing. And I'm not going to look at my phone or any emails or be distracted by anything. But 20 minutes, so from 10 o'clock till 10:20, that's all I'll do. And I get that done.
Do you document it in order to get it?
Yeah, sometimes I'll put that into my diary as well.
Love that. That's very Grace Beverly.
Yeah.
She does that.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. And I think it's a certain sort of brain. I'm always interested by the written brain and the non-verbal brain.
Yes.
But it's interesting to see what processes work, particularly when you're going through a time of change.
Well, exactly. And I build in, because I don't want that overwhelm to creep up again. And I know my warning signs now.
Talk to me about what the warning signs are.
Well, my husband actually has a funny word for it. He calls it hypercluck mode.
Hypercluck. Okay,
I go into hypercluck.
Okay.
You can almost imagine.
I've got it.
And I physically get little pink dots here. Okay. I've probably got them now. I hope I haven't.
Okay, you're
and,
not
and
sure.
And it is
you're
a
gorgeous.
Physical symptom.
Right.
And he will call me out on it. And because we gave it a name,
yes.
that has really helped me. Now
yes.
I can self-diagnose.
Yes, all right.
I'm tipping into hypercluck mode, which is when I am like, I can do everything. You could throw anything at me. Like, I'll answer that query from the builders. I'll do that for the school. I'll get this and that charity. And, you know.
Yeah.
But now I can recognise it because it's got a name. And I think I'm feeling a bit hypercluck today. I just need to pare things back.
How have you learned to say no? Can you teach me?
Yeah, I know. Well, I think, again, that comes back to kindness as well. And being able, saying no is a kind act to yourself. Because obviously in saying yes to too many things, you're saying no to the things that are really, really important to you. Mm. And, you know, in saying yes to going out to this event in the evening or that, I'm saying no to putting my children to bed. Now, what's more important to me in that moment? Well, actually, right now, it's putting my children to bed. Mm. So saying no is an act
what's
of self-compassion.
What's been the toughest no? What's been the thing that you would really have liked to have
done? It's separating ego as well from what you really know is the right thing for you. And again, it comes back to why I think coaching is such a powerful tool, because you can refer back to your values. So when something is requested of you, it might sound really exciting in the instant and my gut reaction might be, yes, I want to do that, without thinking logically whether this is going to fit into my schedule.
I think
and
it's
does
a
it
consequence of being a polymath who's an optimist.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I can get excited about anything.
Yeah.
So everything's like, yeah, great.
And I'm a positive person
absolutely.
As well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I like to say that is my natural thing, you know, and to want to help people and do it all. But I have seen the effect of trying to do it all, and it's just not possible. And I really don't want to be in that place of 2 years ago or worse. So I have to take the learnings from that time and implement them into my life. Otherwise I am going to get back there and I will have learned nothing.
And talk to me about the business.
Yeah, so Rosie's Reinvention Retreats, I started to come up with this idea based on my own experience of feeling like there was no resource out there that spoke to me as a midlife woman living in Britain as a mother and, you know, somebody who thrived from my career. I bought all the books on burnout.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to all the podcasts at the time, but I felt that lots of the language was very negative and quite masculine.
Yeah,
I mean, just the word burnout as well. I didn't really relate to that because I think I was on the road to burnout as well. I didn't have all of those symptoms, but I was probably mentally and physically exhausted. So I felt that there needed to be something that was really practical, that saw me and as a modern woman, and, you know, who was sold the you can do it all dream, who genuinely believed I could for a number of years. But then it hit me along with my hormones as well that I couldn't. So I wanted to create something that would be really accessible but practical and real for midlife women to help them navigate reinvention and transitionary periods. So the retreat gives you an opportunity to pause everyday life. And I do a number of day retreats and also some that are overnight, so that you take that precious time, which you deserve for yourself, to actually do the coaching, do the workshopping, do the working out, gain some self-awareness, and perhaps start to figure out the first steps that you can take towards your new chapter, whatever that might be.
And if you had one piece of advice to share with women and men at that point, at that point of almost maybe burnout, or at that point of perimenopause or menopause, or at that point of I'm staring down the barrel of 50 and I want to change my life, what would you say?
That you deserve a happy and fulfilled life. But if you keep ignoring that little voice in your head, it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to get louder, and it may begin to affect you physically. As we talked about, stress living in the nervous system, this is very real. I mean, the doctor actually said to me, why do you think so many 50-somethings, you know, burst a blood vessel or have a heart attack? You know, stress is related to our physical health. So you owe it to yourself and to the people that you love in your life to put some focus on you. And maybe you haven't done that for a very long time. It can be very emotional on the retreats, you know, and people actually realize that they've never gifted themselves a precious day to put the focus purely on them and their own personal development. And the results of that can be quite profound and life-changing.
The podcast is named after my mantra, my three G's of grit, grace and graft, two of them. Do you have a mantra? And what are some of your words or phrases that you live by?
Well, I think reinvention is possible is a really big one for me. And I think, you know, for people to just realise that there is, it's never too late to change. There is the possibility of a really fulfilling life, but sometimes it takes a bit of work to get there, and that you deserve that. And yeah, that you can, you know, putting self-care is not vanity, you know, it's absolutely essential for your sanity.
Rosie, thank you. Thank you for having such an open and important conversation with me, and I'm sure that your experience and your words of wisdom are going to be super useful to anyone that's listening to this. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I think what was really powerful about talking to Rosie was the sense in which women are able to reinvent themselves in midlife. For someone for whom everything looked perfect, who had the career of dreams as an editor, flying around the world, attending celebrity weddings, controlling the news agenda, actually recognizing that that isn't what you want for your next chapter, and having the grit, the pure grit, to stop, to reinvent and to go again, and the grace that Rosie brings to her life and her motivation to change the lives of midlife women in the future, I thought was really powerful. Plus, you know, never meet your idols. I love the fact that she didn't go on a date with Matt Goss, who would have been the man of her dreams as a teenager. Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time, as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.